Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first marathon experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and today's story started the way a lot of them do, by accident. After not making her middle school soccer team, Karina's coach told her to try cross country, and she's basically been running ever since. That decision led to high school and college teams, coaches who became mentors, and a community that made running feel like home. Years later, she found herself pitching to her alma mater, Baruch College, to become official charity partner for the New York City Marathon, the same school that had supported her for years. When her idea got approved, she trained and fundraised at the same time, raising over $12,000 for students while preparing for her first marathon. Her story is full of full circle moments, from the community that showed up for her to an Ecuadorian flag waiting for her at mile 22 right when she needed it most. It's a story about gratitude, resilience, and the way running connects us to something bigger than ourselves. Without further ado, let's jump right in. Please welcome Karina. Karina, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Super excited to have you on. It sounds like running has been something that's been in your life for a really long time. So I'm excited to kind of break down like the transition of running. And you just ran your first marathon in New York. So this is all very fresh on your mind. But before we jump in, just thank you so much for coming on. I'm excited to talk to you.
Thanks, Taylor. Excited to be here.
Okay, amazing. Well, let's start from the beginning. So this, I remember from your form that running started for you when you were 12 or around that time frame. So how did we get into this crazy world of running in the first place?
Yeah, that's a funny story. I always love to share it. So it was middle school. We were in seventh grade. You could finally try out for the sports. And my family is a big soccer family. We love to watch the European League, the Spanish League, the Latin American Leagues, the US Leagues. So soccer is really big. So my dream in that moment was to play soccer. So I try out for the middle school soccer team and I did not make the cut. And I was so upset. And I went to the coach and I said, hey, what can I do to make the team next year in eighth grade? And the coach goes, join the cross country team and then try again next year. And I say, okay, I didn't even know what cross country was. But I go and I join and I realize it's just you running with a group of friends in trails and your races are in beautiful woods with foliage. And then you get nice apple cider or an apple or a banana after. So they kind of got me with that. And I've been running cross country since middle school, high school, and college. I ran track in middle school and high school as well, all long distance. And that's how it kind of took off. It was kind of unexpected because I started with the idea of doing soccer or joining the soccer team. But I realized cross country was funner for me and I just felt more connected with nature that way and with my family and everything. So that's how I landed with running. And it was a funny experience because in the moment, I was very upset that I didn't make the team. I had these illusions that I was like this next big soccer player, even though I was not. But then on the cross country team, it just felt so natural. I wasn't that good at it, if I'm being honest, in the beginning, middle school years. But what kept me going is my team and my coaches. My coaches at the time, he was a kind of like more senior man. Him and his wife was the high school cross country coach. They were both running Ironmans throughout the year.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, you guys can do that? So I can definitely do this. So that's kind of how I fell into running.
I love it. And it's cool that you've always been in like the distance space. Sometimes we have track athletes on here that were like sprinters turn endurance runners, but you've always been on the endurance side. So I guess what is it about long distance that you like over some of the other distances?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm still trying to answer that for myself because during training, we have speed workout sessions and those are a little more on the longer distance. Like sometimes a speed workout is 9 miles, but you're going fast during some intervals. For me, the speed, it allows me enough time to have silence and think to myself and reflect and connect with like nature and talk with people as well. I think that's the part for me, because when you're doing long distances, your pace should be comfortable enough that you can have a conversation versus when you're doing speed work, you're kind of out of breath for however long, if you're doing 200 meters and then you have to recover and then you do it again. So on top of it being very fast, I felt like speed work lacked a bit of community during the exercise, whereas long distance, you're talking during the warm-ups, you're talking during the exercise and the cool-down. So I like that aspect of community in long distance.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I like that. Well, cool. And then, so you said you did cross-country through middle school and high school. How did you kind of transition from there? So you graduate high school, where you had, did you have like prospects to go to college and do cross-country? Or what did we look like? What did running look like from there?
Yeah, that's another funny story. So I went to college on a full scholarship, like merit-based. So I didn't go to college with sport in mind. I went like, okay, I have to maintain a 3.5 GPA and I'm going to stay focused on that. I don't really want to do clubs or sports because I want to do good in school and get an internship and a job and whatever. But I was curious, so I go to these, what I thought was an informational meeting at the beginning of the year for all the sports. I met the coach. The coach is a wonderful lady. She's Ecuadorian. My family is Ecuadorian. So I was immediately like, wow, you are from where my family is from and you're doing this sport. And she also does Ironman. So I was like, wow, that is really cool. I didn't think I would feel like represented in that way. So I was listening, and then at the end of the what I thought was the informational meeting, the coach hands me these forms and she's like, just get these in by the end of the meeting or the day. And I was like, okay. So I'm signing everything. What I thought was an informational session, it turns out that was the orientation session.
Oh my gosh.
I had just signed up to join the cross country team.
Oh my gosh, and no way.
Yeah, because I had mentioned, oh, I ran cross country in high school and middle school. I'm thinking, I'm just checking, but I'm not sure because I want to, you know, make sure my grades are good. I first time in college. I don't know how this works.
Yeah.
And I had just signed up to join the cross country team. So, and I'm not one to say, never mind, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, I didn't mean because, it. Never mind.
Yeah, especially because I had already done cross country before, like I was comfortable with the distances. It wasn't anything like, oh my god, out of my world. But it was also like the coach, she was Ecuadorian, she kind of had the same background as my other coaches, so I felt comfortable like knowing that I was in good hands, that the coach knew how to do long distances and training and everything. And so that's how I joined the college cross country team. Honestly, I'm so happy it worked out that way.
Yeah,
because that was in 2018. I graduated in 22. It was a little during call. I was captain actually in 20 and 21. 20 was during COVID, so
yeah,
we kind of worked out online on Zoom, like with conditioning and stuff. And then 21, my senior year, I was captain. I was able to get a whole group of girls, because you need at least 5 on the roster and people need to be there at every meet and stuff. So it was awesome. It was great how it worked out.
Yeah, sounds like a happy accident for sure that it ended up that way. How did it feel? You said that this coach was also Ecuadorian. So how did it feel to like have representation like that in college? I know that you were expecting it to be like an orientation. You weren't expecting to dive right in, but like, did that help put your mind at ease about jumping into a new college experience and, you know, like having people around you that you could see yourself in?
Yeah, definitely. It felt like I was kind of at home because my family never went to college, so I didn't really know what to expect. I went to a commuter school, which is not like the traditional college experience, and it was in the heart of New York City. So there was just a lot of variables going on that I wasn't aware of or not sure how to kind of react to. But when I saw the coach, it was my first coach that was a woman of color or a person of color. And she gave us our background, how she's been coaching for years. She went to school for sports medicine, I think. And she has this history of doing Ironmans and ultras. And I was like, wow, okay, you definitely know your stuff. So there's no question about being competent, but I feel comfortable with you. Like, I feel like you could be my my mom's best friend or something.
Yeah.
And like, you would understand if maybe I can't make the practice because I have a family thing to handle, or I just have a long commute. And so that was also really helpful because she was understanding of all of the students' different scenarios. But my school also, I went to Baruch College, is one of the most diverse schools in the state of New York. And New York is a very diverse state. And actually, yeah. Like I mentioned, my family is Ecuadorian. Baruch College had the only Ecuadorian club in the city.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so Ecuadorian club is like, you don't have to be Ecuadorian to join it, but it's the purpose is to celebrate and share about the Ecuadorian culture with people. And so I joined that club too, but just to have my coach, my college cross-country coach, be Ecuadorian, I was like, yeah, this is a sign from the universe that I am right. safe here, I am welcome here, and that my culture is being celebrated because the college hired my coach. So I was like, yeah, this is, everything is kind of falling into place. And because of the whole soccer scenario, I was like, yeah, like, I'm okay with things not being the way I thought it might be, because they probably turn out for the better than I would have imagined.
Totally. Yeah, there's definitely some universe signs somewhere in there that were pointing you to this school. I guess we'll kind of get to your, like, how you landed on the marathon distance later. But I'm curious, like, while you were in college having this experience, like, what were some of the things about running that you were learning as you transitioned from high school cross country to college cross country?
I think college cross country was way more serious than high school. That being said, it was a D3 school, so it wasn't like D1 or stuff, but we trained with or are in the same facilities as D1 and D2 colleges. And that was really inspiring. We would go to, like, Fridays would be our long run days. We would go to Van Cortlandt and we would practice at the same time that Columbia would practice. And
it would
be so amazing to see their teams just zoom during hills. Like, they are, I don't know if this is the right term, but I just felt like I was in the presence of elite horses, because they were just insanely strong and fast. So I realized that during college, all 4 years was like, okay, this isn't just a recreational hobby. This is a serious endeavor where people train for years. They have multiple coaches, nutritionists, like, their sleep is on point with their technology, and it's a whole community. It's not just you, the runner. It's like your parents showing up, or you have clothes after somebody's waiting for you, or your coaches or your assistant coaches. That's when I realized it's not just, okay, we're going to go and do a little run in the trails. It's more like, okay, we have a goal set in mind. This is how we're going to reach it. We're going to reach it together, although we're all running our individual races. And I really like that, because although you're running alone, I felt like you're running with a community of people on the race, but also that are supporting you outside. Even people like on other schools are cheering you on, like families from the other schools that you're competing with, everybody's cheering you on. So that felt really powerful. But also the individual competition, I really liked, because I felt like everybody had their own individual goal. They weren't competing against each other. And the goal was almost always like, how can I be better than yesterday? And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds like a really fun experience. So I guess we got through college, we graduated. And then what did running look like from there? What were you thinking about, like, carrying with you from college into post college running?
Yeah. So after college, I'm from New York City. After college, I moved to Cincinnati, Ohio for a job.
Okay.
Yeah. So I moved from New York, the Northeast, to the Midwest. I didn't have any family there. I didn't really know anybody there. I made my whole community there. I decided to kind of take a break from running because I wanted to find new sports. So I really got into yoga.
Mm.
But ultimately, I had a craving for running. And a year after, I ran my second half and a few 10Ks. And I found a running community there, too. I joined a training program. It was really fun. And then fast forward another year, I moved back to New York City. At this point, I had run about four halves. So my running break was short.
Sure.
Yeah. And I realized the half distance was like, I felt like I could do it. I've done it enough times that I felt like I needed a challenge. So mentally, I had already become comfortable with the idea of running a marathon. And I've always wanted to run a marathon. I just never thought that I would be able to do it. But now that I had four halves under my belt, I was like, okay, I think I can do it if I have some training versus I don't know if I'll ever be able to do it. So my mindset kind of shifted post-college once I had a few halves under my belt. The how I got into this marathon is a very beautiful story, I think. So after I graduated college, I know I talked about it a lot, but I kind of stayed involved with the school. I became a trustee for the Baruch College Fund, which is a nonprofit that privately fundraises for the school because the school receives city, state, federal funding. And over the years, the state funding decreases with budget cuts. So that's why the nonprofit exists, to privately fundraise. And I was the representative of my class here. So I supported like yearly galas to fundraise and Giving Tuesday events. But last year I had an idea and I put two and two together. I said, okay, the New York City Marathon is the most iconic race in the world. I know people fundraise to get into the New York City Marathon. Does it fit with my nonprofit, the Baruch College Fund? I did some mental gymnastics and I was like, I'm pretty sure it does because the Baruch College Fund is the most diverse school in the city. New York is the most diverse city in the world. The students at Baruch are 40% of them are first generation. So in my opinion, I feel like the students are running their own marathon just to get to school and graduate school, life post-grad. And what better way to fundraise than to celebrate both of those spirits of resilience than running through all five boroughs of New York and fundraising? So I was very motivated by this idea. My nonprofit, they stick to like normal fundraising methods or traditional fundraising methods, like a gala or email outreach or one-on-one relationships, stuff like that. So I pitched it to the board that I was a trustee of. And I said, hey, this is the first time we're doing this. I think it would be a great addition to all the programs that we're doing, and it could be a great way to involve alumni from the city. And the board supported me. They said, of course, I think it's a great idea too. We can pilot it. So that's what we did. I helped us apply to be a charity partner. The Baruch College Fund became a charity partner. Since I had experience running cross country for the school and I was still running, I was like, I would love to be a marathon runner for the school.
Yeah, I volunteer.
Yes. And that's how we did it. So I was one out of a team of three. We each had a minimum fundraising commitment of $3,000. All the money raised would go to the unrestricted funds of the Baruch College Fund, which means that it would help support pay for scholarships, books, food, the emergency food fund or emergency housing or student programming, whatever the students needed. Even sometimes that fund is used to pay adjunct professors. So all in all, we just raced last week, but we raised over $12,000. And
it's amazing.
That supports about three students' tuitions for a semester. So it was a great journey. That's how I was able to run the marathon this year, because I pitched the program to my nonprofit, and I was thankfully able to be one of the runners. And so I felt like it was a great combination of me continuing my love for running, but also giving back to my community and also kind of being back home in New York since I had a little stint in Ohio.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love that so much. And it, like you said, or what we said before, when you ended up at this college, it seems like a lot of roads just have kind of connected with you through this experience. So that's really awesome. And amazing that you were able to tie in like your love for running with your love for community and getting the school together as well. So that sounds like, amazing. So I guess fundraising, I fundraised for Chicago. Less aggressive, I would say, a goal for like fundraising goal than I hear for New York is a little bit more expensive. So I guess what were some of the things that you were thinking in terms of like fundraising activities and getting community involved? Like how did this all come together for fundraising and training for your first marathon?
Yeah, I think I love to learn about everybody's different fundraising paths because everybody does what they can with what they have, right?
Yeah.
For me, I was so excited that I was able to get this crew assembled and that we were going to have Goodwill, like name out there, that I kind of put off fundraising until the middle of the summer because I was like, wow, we did this. This is amazing. And so I started fundraising at the same time I started training, which is around July, and okay. It was due in October. We had like milestone check-ins. You needed to raise half of it by August and then the entire of it by September. So by July, I was like, oh my gosh, the marathon is coming. I'm starting training and I need to start fundraising. Okay, awesome. I started sharing with every single person I knew about my marathon via text, phone calls, emails. I posted on social media and I was able to get about half by my milestone, my first milestone. And then I needed to keep fundraising. So what I did is I just kept asking my mentors and stuff. I had one mentor, she works for New York City FC in marketing, and she donated to me a few tickets to a soccer game. So I raffled those off. I asked folks to donate for entry to a raffle. I did the raffle on Instagram Live, and my friends were able to go see their first New York City game, which is really fun that I was able that, thanks to my mentor donating. Yeah. I'm also a yoga teacher. I got my yoga certification last winter. So I also hosted a yoga donation-based class. I got one of my mentors also to help me with an event space that she owns. She donated that for the evening for me to hold the space for folks. And yeah, I called folks. I was very surprised at the power of community because a lot of people were inspired. I had a friend offer a match on my fundraising page. I didn't ask her. She just did it. So I was like, wow, that's so cool. Thank you. And I've had a lot of mentors throughout my years. So even if they're not in New York, I sent them an email and they know I've been running for a long time. So they were so happy to support me. And I posted it on LinkedIn. So it was really fun. I asked my family. I got employer matches. I always encourage folks to, if they want to do a marathon and they have the idea of fundraising for charity, I think it's a great idea because you get people involved. They feel like they're also doing it. I tell people all the time, I had about 78 donors. I was like, I didn't run this by myself. I ran this with all 78 of you guys. So thank you so much for supporting me in this huge thing.
That's amazing. Yeah, I wanted to ask because I know a lot of people are a little intimidated by charity fundraising sometimes because it's like this other thing that you have to do on top of running your marathon. But like it can be, like you said, it can be really community driven and it can be a great way to connect with people and make your story and your journey about more than yourself. So I love the ideas and I love that you were able to do that. That's amazing. I guess kind of pivoting back to like the running side of things, because you were fundraising, but then you were also training for your first marathon. What were some of the high points? What were some of the low points? Like how did training look for you as you started to think about the marathon?
Yeah, that's a great question. I did a 16-week training program, so there were definitely a lot of highs and lows and maybe plateaus in between. But I would say one of the lows that I encountered in the beginning, because for New York, it's really hard to get into via a lottery, or you have to do the 9+1 the year before, or you have to be elite runner, or you fundraise. And when I shared with people that I was fundraising early on, it was very easy to tell who would kind of is supportive of that idea and who isn't. Yeah. And so I think that was hard mentally in the beginning because I wasn't prepared for people to be like, wow, you're fundraising? That must be tough. Like, wow, in this economy, you're fundraising and asking people for money? How can you be doing such a thing? I never thought of it like that because I was fundraising for scholarships for students like me so that they can continue to live their life and support their family and make their dreams come true. I never thought about it through a scarcity mindset like that. And so that was really hard for me in the beginning because here were some folks that I thought would support me and ultimately they might be, you know, facing their own battles and could be projecting onto me. So it took me a little bit to turn that around and say, sure, we can look at it like that, but I'm not coming at it from that place. I'm coming at it from a place of abundance. If you can't support me like monetarily, no problem. Let's go for a run, or let's go for some pasta on Friday night before my long run. Like, there's so many ways. It's not just monetarily. It's more so like the idea of the mission. So that was a little hard mentally, but I was able to kind of twist it. And I did mention, like, sure, you can look at it like that, but that's not how I'm looking at it. And I will find my people who will support me and have the same kind of vision as me. So that was an early learning in the beginning, surrounding myself with people who kind of carry an abundance mindset and were creative in that sense, which, again, like, I also tried not to take anything personal. That's I love this book. It's called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz.
It's a great one.
That's one of the agreements, to not take anything personal. Cause I thought everybody would be like, wow, this is a great idea, Karina. And that wasn't the case. So I always try not to take things personal. Like, okay, this is your life and I wish you the best, but this is my goal and I will find ways to make it come true. So that was a little bit of a low. It doesn't really have to do with training, but people ask, like, how'd you get into New York? And so that's how the conversation starts. Training was hard, I think, because I'm running two marathons next year. Where I think I could have done better was having a stronger base before the 16 weeks started. Mm-hmm. I ran two halves in the first half of the year, but I was injured after the second one, so I had to take some time off, and that meant my base was probably like a 10 mile per week base before marathon training, which is not ideal. So now that I'm going into two next year, I will definitely keep up my base a little more if I can. Training was it intense, I will say that, because I didn't realize how much goes into it, because for me, at least, the non-negotiables were Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. That was our speed workout. Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. Those were our long runs. And then I run on my own Tuesday and Friday. And on top of that, I needed to do strength training 2 to 3 times a week, lifting weights. I practically never lift weights. And I also do a weekly solid core class, Pilates class. That's one of my strength training. And I was coming from a very strong yoga background. So I was very mobile. I was very flexible, but I needed to add in all these other workouts, sometimes working out twice a day. And as we go more further into the weeks, the runs get longer. So the first long run was like an 8 mile. Then our longest long run was 20 miles. So 8 mile, that's probably like an hour and 20 max, then going to running 3 hours and 30 minutes for your longest run. That's how long you're out there. And then you have to shower, you have to eat, you have to rest, you have to do all these things. So I wasn't expecting running to take up so much of my life. I heard of it, like, get ready to say bye to your social life, but I didn't.
I didn't. You don't know until it's like extent. You're doing it. Exactly. Yeah.
The great thing about it, though, was I started doing new things that I hadn't done before, like working with a nutritionist. I think that was the best thing I could have done, because I've been running for a while. I was like, okay, we're doing a marathon. I've never done this before. On top of fundraising. So there's going to be some blind spots. Let me try to anticipate them. And one of them was my fueling. I feel like notoriously I am known for under eating because I'm always on a rush, or I just don't think about it, or whatever the case may be. So I felt like I was coming from that background. And with the marathon, I was like, those two things cannot coexist. So I found a nutritionist with my insurance, RDN, and she really helped me figure out what works for me. I've worked with a nutritionist before because I've been running, but they didn't really work for me, I guess, in that moment. But this nutritionist had an approach where it's like, okay, whatever fits in your lifestyle, whatever you already like, we're just going to add more of that. So that really helped me. I had a signature like carb loading meal before my long runs, a signature breakfast every day that I would have, some snacks during the day, or like my meals before my speed runs, because sometimes like I would run at 6:30, so I felt like I would be missing out on dinner. So the solution there is cook the night before so that you can have dinner before your speed run and also have leftovers for the next day. So it was really great because my RDN, she was a professional swimmer at one point and she swam through college. So I was like, okay, I feel comfortable knowing that you also are in this world of sports and you can help me find a realistic plan. And one that wouldn't keep me in the kitchen for multiple hours, but had like meals lined up for me in the fridge. So that was a really good thing that I implemented with this training block and that I will probably continue. Because I didn't realize how fueling is so important. Like sometimes you feel tired, of course, because you're running so much, but it might not be from lack of sleep. It just might be from lack of carbs or lack of protein or electrolytes or whatever it might be. And it was really cool learning about all of that, like how you can get electrolytes from food or just like sustainable whole foods. So I think that was probably the best thing for the training, but also for the trajectory of my life.
Totally. Yeah, that's really cool that you were able to, like, at the beginning of training, identify some of these, or like you said, like anticipate some of these areas that were going to be maybe a challenge or a struggle, or just with time management as a whole. We always joke like training for a marathon and is a whole other marathon in itself just because of the time commitment. So I like that you were thinking about like, how can I move these like obstacles out of my way? It sounds like that it was in your favor for sure from a dietitian standpoint. Were they teaching you how to fuel like on run as well, or was it mostly like pre-run fuel, dinners, breakfasts, like you were talking about?
We did talk a little bit about on-run fuel. I feel lucky that I tested a few gels beforehand, like before training started, because I ran a few halves and I found the right gel that worked for me. And I just kind of stuck to that. She did give me options, like you could always chew on orange slices or mango, dried mango pieces, stuff like that. But I found what worked for me, so I stick to that for during the runs. I'm a big fan of the Huma chia gels. I love them. I feel like I'm a little kid just eating an applesauce packet. So
yeah,
those are my favorites.
That's great. Awesome. Cool. So for the actual running side, I guess let's talk about maybe your peak run. Did you run like your longest run? Was that a 20-mile run, 22? Where did you kind of peak out towards the end of training?
Yeah, my long run was a 20-mile. I did it at a 9:45 pace. We started in Columbus Circle, ran across the Queensboro, and then did the last 10 miles of the course. It was funny because actually that day I was supposed to run the Staten Island half, but it got canceled because of a nor'easter.
Oh, sure.
But I was actually happy because had I run the half, I needed to run like 2 miles before then and then like 6 miles after. So I was pleasantly happy with running it. We were still running in the rain, but it was great. I was able to do 20 with my team and kind of keep up with the pace.
Cool. Okay, cool. So yeah, I guess we didn't really talk about the team so much in the beginning. So you were training with it was two other people, right, that were also fundraising for New York?
Yeah. So it was a team, a fundraising team of three folks, but we all ran on our own because we live not very close. So what I did is I joined a 16-week training program with Fleet Feet.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, they were the ones who host the Wednesday workouts and the Saturday workouts. I'm also part of a run club, so they have their runs on Thursdays. And another run club, they have their runs on Fridays. So sometimes I would mix and match my Thursday and Friday. And so I would try to run 2 to 3 times a week with a crew, just because like you're out there for a long time and I want to catch up with friends. And my easy runs were always on my own around my neighborhood.
Cool. It sounds like, I mean, throughout your story, community has been huge, but do you, through training for your first marathon, how much of an impact do you think training with a group had on your overall experience?
I think it was super important for me to have that community because I never did any of that. Like, I've never run a marathon, so I've always had questions. So I would ask the coaches. There were about 11 coaches, and each coach had a pace group. So I had two coaches for my pace group, and I felt very comfortable asking them questions because they've already done marathons. They were running unsanctioned races now. So it was really important for me. I kind of felt like a new runner, even though I've been running for many years, because I've never done this type of distance or just sure. mentally had this type of challenge. So having the coaches was really important, but also having a group of people that were on the same journey was also great because we could be like, yeah, I'm so tired too, but we have to do this. Yeah. And this is why we're doing it. This is why I'm running the DC marathon or the Philly marathon or Chicago. So it was cool. And that's how I met a lot of runners who are also fundraising. And that's what I meant about like finding my community or them finding me. So it was a great, great way of how it worked out.
Love that. That's amazing. Cool. So it sounds like the 20-mile run went pretty well. So the taper, well, I'm sure you went into taper from there. Taper usually is either like the worst experience ever for people or it's like the most awesome experience for people. How was taper for you? Do you feel like you liked it or was it something that was like a little uncomfortable for you?
Taper was very tough for me. I had the taper tantrums, as they call it. So we had a very hard speed workout. It was a ladder workout right before taper started. And for some reason, I decided to beat my PRs during that speed session. That kind of took me a little bit to recover from. So my taper, I felt like I was running slower than normal and I wasn't doing enough or I needed to like do more, but I knew that I couldn't. So mentally, it was a little tough. How I kind of navigated that is I did more social stuff because now I wasn't out there running for so many hours. I tried to keep up with my nutrition. That's what I kind of reframed it as. I was like, okay, less time outside, more time in the kitchen, because just because I'm not running doesn't mean my fuel needs haven't changed. Actually, now my fuel needs should be, if not the same, more, because soon we'll be carb loading. So I kind of had to take my mind from outside to inside and like get ready mentally, like my sleep schedule, my wardrobe, what I'm going to do that week. And the week before the marathon, I had a work trip. So I was in Seattle for Monday through Wednesday. And so I was trying to navigate that too, because I'm in the air and I might not be able to work out over there. What am I going to do? Yeah. I'm going to cycle. I'm going to swim. So just trying to navigate all those things. And the New York City Marathon is 2 days after Halloween. So it was also trying to make plans with friends and stuff. So it was a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of logistics, for sure. Yeah. But how were you feeling leading up to the race? Like, let's say the 2-3 days before, were you feeling excited, nervous? Like what was going through your head the couple days before?
I was nervous for sure. I couldn't believe the day had finally arrived because I pitched this to my board in December of 2024. And we got notified in April that we're going to be a charity partner. And I've been talking about this for months and I've been training for this. And finally, it felt like the day was here. And I was like, I haven't been running as much, like the taper tantrum. So I was like, oh my God, am I actually ready for this? So I was definitely nervous for sure. I felt on race day and leading up to race day, I wasn't expecting this, but I was just overwhelmed with the amount of love and energy that I was receiving. Because as I was getting nervous, I stopped being, I kind of became less vocal about it because I was like, oh my God, it's here.
Like maybe it's happening.
I was like, maybe if I don't talk about it so much, I'll still have time to feel ready or whatever. But
sure.
No. I had people, my friends from, they don't even live in New York, text me, like, how are you feeling? I requested everybody to wear pink, so if they came on the course, so I could spot them with a color block.
Smart.
Yeah, and my friends who don't even live here, they sent me pictures of them wearing pink supporting me.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I didn't expect any of that. I just, my idea was like, okay, I'm going to get to the race. I'm going to try my best, and we're going to see what happens, because I've never done it before.
Yeah.
And I was just, that surprised me the most, how much love and energy that I received. And people were like, wow, Karina, I can't believe you did this, because not only are you running the race, but you've been training for 16 weeks. I've said no to multiple social outings because I had to be asleep. I have also been sober during this entire journey. I have long days at work. Sometimes I can't make family events because my Saturday long run is just taking up the whole day, or I need to rest on Sunday because I'm very tired. So a lot of people were like, wow, it's really inspiring to see you put yourself first, but also fundraise on behalf of this cause that you also benefited from, so that more people can benefit from too. So I had a lot of people like tell me that individually, that I wasn't expecting at all. I wasn't expecting like flowers or anything like that, because I was just doing this for myself and for the students that I'm fundraising. So I didn't think that it would have this effect on all these people. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. I was just kind of at a loss for words, because I was like, wow, I'm on the ferry to Staten Island, and I'm seeing this beautiful skyline of the New York City, and with runners from around the world, and we're all here for one thing, to do this in the best city of the world. Like, it was just such an overwhelming feeling that I wasn't prepared for, but I tried to soak it all in and give thanks to everybody who supported me. That's why I say, like, I didn't run this by myself. I ran it with all 78 people who donated, or people who wished me well, or cooked for me, or gave me some running fuel, or whatever the case may be, right? So it was definitely like the week leading up to the marathon was a lot. Like, I had to, I like to meditate as well. So I whenever I felt overwhelmed, I would step aside, I would do breath work, I would meditate a little bit, and then I felt centered again. Because also New York is such a big city, and people were coming in from around the world, and the marathon in New York is like electric. There's crowds everywhere, and when you have a medal on and people would just scream for you, you don't even know them, and it's like, wow, like, thank you. I feel so, like, this is an amazing feeling. So It was a definitely beautiful experience. I'm so happy that I did it, that I trained for it, that I fundraised, that I got my whole family involved. Because even my family was like, wow, Karina, you did this. We're also going to do it. So I have a few friends who have already signed up for 5Ks throughout the rest of the year. Yeah, or have joined the lotteries for the halves. Even my family, they're starting to like look into mud races and stuff. So I'm like, wow, I never imagined to have that kind of impact on people, because I was also sharing my journey on Instagram or TikTok, because I wanted to have people come along for my journey, since they're donating. And even if they're not donating, like, it is achievable for you to do your marathon, no matter what pace or time. You have a community, you have a program. So I felt very thankful that Taper Tantrums was put away by the overwhelming love and energy I felt that week.
I love that. That's amazing. Yeah. So they were hopefully getting you excited, and turning some of those nerves into like, let's do this. Like, let's get to the start line and do it. Let's fast forward to race morning. So race morning, I know that there's always logistics with New York. Even if you live there, there's like a boat, a ferry, a blank. You got to get to where you're going in some sort of way. But once you got to the actual start line, you were in your corral, you were around all the people. How are we feeling? Were we still feeling nervous? Were we feeling ready? Like, what's going through your head at the start line?
At the start line, I was like, oh my God, I am here. This is it. This is everything that I've trained for, everything that I've advocated for. It's all here. Like, I can't believe I'm here. I really could not believe it, because I was with runners from around the world, and suddenly it dawned on me that I'll be a marathoner. Like, what? Who said that? Like, right. That is insane.
How did we get here?
Yeah, when I've been training for this kind of my whole life. So it was like, wow. And the day was beautiful. There were no clouds. There was sun. So it felt like everything was right. And still, I don't know if it was doubt. I think I was nervous because I was like, oh my God, my family drove from all this distance to be at this point. And what if I miss them? Or like, can I really run across the Verrazano Bridge? Like, this feels superhuman.
Sure.
So it was very nerve wracking for me because there's a lot of people, right? But I didn't really know anybody in my corral, which is good. I wanted to keep it that way so I could have the moment to myself and like soak it in. And the volunteers on the course and even the runners too were super helpful because I think they saw on my face, or maybe they're just super excited, but they were like, good job, runners. You're going to go out there. You're going to have fun. You get a high five. Every runner gave you a high five. I had my name on my bib. So they were like, you got this, Karina. I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. I got this. So,
I can do it. Yes.
Yeah. So it was magical. It was funny because during the entire training block, I felt strong. I felt great. I was like, yes, of course I can do this. I'm a yoga teacher. I've been running since I was 12. Like, this is great. I'm very strong. Nothing but great feedback from my coaches. I was injured before, but I've been rehabbing the entire year. I feel strong. But as we got to race day, it kept hitting me like, oh my God, I'm going to do 26.2 miles in the greatest city in the world. Like, what? That's insane. Yeah. But it's not insane because I've been training for this. So it was a little bit of a battle in my head. Like, why do you think you can't do this, Karina? Why all of a sudden are you doubting yourself when you've had all these stats? I've racked up almost 700 miles running this year. So I'm like, the only person against you is yourself right now, Karina. Stop this. Take it all in and enjoy it. And so that was definitely a conversation I was having with myself.
Yeah.
Because also I was like, what am I going to do when I'm done with this marathon? Like, I've been doing this for so long that am I just going to run another marathon after? Which, yes, that's what I'm going to be doing. So
yeah,
it was a great, beautiful experience. I wish I was able to record more of it, but I had my phone on airplane mode and I needed to have my phone charged after the race so I could find my family and stuff. But I appreciated that because I was able to fully take in the moment and remember it.
Sure. I love that. Amazing. All right, cool. Well, let's break down the race. I'm excited to hear about it. Let's break down maybe the first half to start, and then we can kind of break it into whatever pieces that you see fit. But how was the first 13? That was the charted territory for you from like a racing standpoint. So how was the first 13?
Yeah, my strategy going into it was the 20 miles, first 20 miles was going to be a warm up, and the six miles at the end was going to be where I kind of lock in. That's how our training was. My coach said, think of the race as your Saturday long runs as the first 20 miles and your Wednesday speed runs as the last six. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to put all of that on pause because my first mile in, I was so, so excited that I was running the New York City Marathon, that I'm at the start line. I'm on the Verrazano Bridge. No, like a lot of people can't do this or aren't able to, that I did not anticipate a pothole on the Verrazano. And my foot got stuck in it and I rolled my ankle like at the mile. Yeah. And I was like, this is okay. Got it. Because I felt like the sharp pain go up to my knee. And I was like, I got to take it easy now. Like, this is not about my strategy that's going to have to hold for another race. This is about my body and how I'm feeling, like truly feeling, because the crowds are so electric that they kind of carry you. But I didn't want to be in pain after. Like, I didn't want another rehab since I had already injured the same ankle before. So I was like, okay, now I need to lock in with my body and how I'm feeling. I kept checking like every mile. How's my head? How's my stomach? How's my legs? What can I do? If I need to walk, if I need to take a gel, whatever it may be. So the first 13 miles, it was a mix of that plan, but also I was kind of sad that I had to put my training racing strategy on hold, because now I'm in another mindset of just looking at my at where I'm stepping, because there's a lot of runners, so you got to make sure you're being safe for everybody. And I had my friends throughout the entire course. I didn't touch my phone the entire race, so I wasn't like texting with them where they were. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of surprised every time I saw them. My first friend was at mile 3, and that was so beautiful because I was feeling bad for myself. I was having like a little pity party, like, oh no, like all these this months of training, and now it's not gonna be that. But my friend saw me. He was with his mom and his whole family. They were all wearing pink. They had the Ecuadorian flags, and they were like, "Karina," and I was like, "Oh my god, you came out to support me! Like, this is so beautiful." They said they would. I didn't think it would materialize. Yeah, yeah. Right. And that's when I was like, okay, yeah, this is not about my ego. This is not about me feeling bad about myself. This is about me, like, showing up for myself and my community, because they all came out here for me. So I'm just going to have the best experience that I can and take it all in. So I'm very thankful that I saw my friends throughout the race. At mile 14, right before going on to the Queensboro, I saw my aunt and my cousin. They had printed out this huge picture of me running, and they had me on Facebook Live and everything. It was so beautiful.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute.
Yeah, and then we crossed the Queensboro. The Queensboro was my favorite part of the whole course, which I feel like is a funny thing to say. I know some runners don't like it. I've trained on the Queensboro multiple times, so I think that's why I like it. Like, I was mentally comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. But I really liked that it was silent, because the whole course is screaming people. You got bells. My favorite part during Brooklyn was there were a lot of little kids lined up on the course, and they would give out high fives. There was actually a little girl. She was giving out this bracelet. It says "Run Strong."
Cute. So,
yeah, I was like, oh yes, I need a high five from you specifically.
Yeah, right. So, I need give me this energy. This is what I need.
Yeah, and so the being on the Queensboro Bridge, where it's just runners and it's silence, I really appreciated that, because it felt like one of the only intimate moments with the other runners.
Yeah.
Because you have all these moments with yourself, with the city, but with the runners itself, it's so beautiful. And we were getting up to the 25K mark, and I realized it's very quiet. You just hear the sound of other people breathing and their footsteps. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're almost halfway through. This is incredible. And I just get this wave of energy, and I'm like, let's go. And I'm screaming, and I'm like, we're in this. And then suddenly everybody else starts screaming, and everybody's yes, we're in this. So I kind of started off a cheer/chant, and it was beautiful, because then we start going on to the First Avenue, and that's when the it's just roar of people and bells and the police sirens. They're like, everybody's cheering for you. It's like, wow, like, this is incredible. From 59th up to 120th, it was so beautiful to see everybody's signs, the music. My family was at 120th and First Avenue at the charity cheer zone, and just seeing them kind of took my breath away, if I'm being honest, because I knew they were going to be there, but just seeing them lined up wearing pink with the flags, they had all made signs. I was just like, I knew they were going to be there, but I kind of forgot because I was in the whole thing, the thick of it.
Yeah.
So when I saw them, I was like, I was in shock. I was like, oh my God, you guys are here. Like, obviously I know they're here.
Right.
I didn't picture it like that. And I just wish I had like a camera on and I could just take that picture. I have it. It's in my head. But
yeah,
it was just so beautiful, because like, they took videos of me, and you could just see me. I'm like, wow, like, this is like, I'm hugging myself, because I'm like, wow, like, I wish I could just take all this energy, put it in a bottle and keep it with me forever.
Yeah.
And my dad had a little fueling, like pre-workout energy booster for me. And I was so excited that I forgot that he had it. I forgot to stop to grab it from him. And then my dad kept running actually after me. He found me a few blocks up and he was like, Karina, you need to take this.
Yeah.
So it was so beautiful seeing them at mile 20 because I was like, okay, I have 6 miles left. Like, this is a great morale booster for me. We get it to the Bronx and we're up Willis Avenue. That was a pretty steep hill. I'm like, yeah, I say out loud, I'm like, yeah, I have to walk this. But I didn't expect anybody to hear me. And then another runner, he hears me. He's walking, running past me. He's like, yes, you take your break. You start running whenever you want to. This is your race. Don't worry about anybody else. I didn't know him, but he was just like, take it easy. I was like, okay, thank you so much. I needed that reminder.
Yes.
I start running. The Bronx is great. I love the Bronx. I'm also from the Bronx. So just being in that borough is like beautiful. And we finish the Bronx, we go to Madison Avenue. Then it starts to get a little dark because by this time it's like 3:30 p.m. The sun sets at 4:30. And I'm like, wow, okay. We are 3 miles from the end. We're almost there. And during the entire race, like I'm an emotional person. So every time I saw my friends or my family or a beautiful sign, or a spot that reminded me of like where I grew up, I just wanted to cry because I was like, oh my God, this is beautiful. Like, I'm doing this. This is amazing. But I saw a TikTok or a video or whatever, and it was like, every time you cry during your race, you are losing hydration, your electrolytes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You can't cry. You have to wait until you're done. So I was like, okay, I can't cry. We hold it together. Yeah. Yes, literally. And I just kept telling myself that. I was like, okay, mile 15, mile 18, mile 21, mile 24, because I need to take my gels, right? So I kept reminding myself, just 1 foot in front of the other. We got this. Keep going. And I love the crowds. They were handing out orange slices. I didn't know how orange slices could be so helpful until I had them. It was just like a reminder that we're in this. We're going down Fifth Avenue. Again, the crowds are electric. There was a Superman and a Superwoman back in Brooklyn, and then they were on for Fifth Avenue. So I was like, wow, you guys are really superhuman because you guys are traveling super fast. But it was beautiful. Finally get into Central Park and like, wow, I only have like a mile left. Like, this is light work. This is my warm up. This is nothing. I can do this. And just going in, like, as I get closer to the finish line, I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to run my first marathon. I'm the first person in my family and in both family generations to run a marathon. Like, this is insane. And so I kept thinking about that, like, wow, like, how privileged am I to get to do this? What an honor it is to move my body. How lucky am I that I get to breathe this air and share this moment with so many people? Like, this is amazing. So I was overwhelmed with gratitude and love and energy that it was hard for me not to get emotional. And that's what I mean. Like, okay, we're almost there. Yeah. And yeah, I had a little bit of gas left in the tank and I was like, wow, this is incredible. Also, when I was, in the Bronx or on Fifth Avenue, there was an Ecuadorian flag in the middle of the course. People were, I guess somebody had it on their shirt or something and it had fallen off. And I saw it and I stopped and I was like, no, there's no way that people can be stepping on this flag. It could have been any flag. Honestly, it could have been there were 200 countries there, I think. It could have been any flag, but it was the Ecuadorian flag that was in the center of the route. So I grabbed the flag and I had tucked it underneath my short. I was also wearing it on the back of my shirt. And I mentioned this because in the finish line, like the finish line photos are really important. And I wanted to hold up the flag, but I couldn't bring a full flag with me during the whole race. So I just found it funny how I found this Ecuadorian flag at mile 22, yeah. I think, just laying on the center of the course, waiting for somebody to pick it up. And I did so. And
that's when it hit me at like 200 meters. I was like, oh my God, the finish line is right there. I pulled out the flag and I'm just like carrying it like this, like for the photos and everything. And I just felt so happy. I was like, wow, this is incredible. I just like everything worked out the way it needed to be. It was around, I think, 4:30 or 4:15, 4 p.m. So the sun was still out. And mm-hmm. It was just beautiful because the last 100 or so meters is all the flags of the world. And actually, on Friday was the Parade of Nations. And I had walked with the Ecuadorian delegation in that parade to represent the country of Ecuador, because all the runners of Ecuador were there, too. So it just felt like super full circle that, like, again, like I was running this race by myself, but I felt like I was running it with everybody who donated, my entire family. Like, it wasn't just myself sport. My friends from like Kansas City were tracking me on the Find My app. So it was a beautiful experience. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Oh, I love it. I got chills a little bit when you were talking about the flag. It's like there's multiple points of your story where it seemed like things just lined up perfectly. Like a million things can go wrong in a training block. A million things can go wrong in a race, but it always seems like when you need a sign, the sign is there. You know what I mean? Like, whether it's a billboard, whether it's somebody holding something, whether it's a flag at mile 22, like, when you need something, it always seems like something's there. And I think that's something that's so, so beautiful about the marathon distance, but amazing. I have chills. I love it. Awesome. Well, cool. Well, I love to, there's a couple questions I always love to ask about kind of the finish line and then some advice for some newer marathoners. But first, when you cross the finish line, like it seemed like there was so much that you were carrying with you. You were carrying with you this fundraising experience. You were carrying with you this like college experience that you had where you were getting involved with like different communities that you related to and the communities that you built over time. So I guess if you could boil it down to a feeling when you cross the finish line, like what was that feeling for you? What were you carrying with you when you crossed the finish line there?
Gratitude. I was just so thankful that I get to live in New York, that I get to have all the experiences that led me to that moment. Because you don't just wake up and you're like, I want to run a marathon. This has been a thought since I was 12, basically. Like, can I do this? Because my coaches did Ironman. So I had an idea of this. So I was just so thankful that I was healthy, that I was strong, that I had this entire community of people supporting me, but also thankful to be in that space because all these other 56, 59,000 runners have a story like me. They have all these people supporting them. So I just felt so thankful and hopeful to be in that space. It was just an overwhelming feeling of love, and it's a beautiful experience. I'm so thankful that I was able to decide to pitch the program, to decide to join a training program, that I decided to work with a registered dietary nutritionist, to decide to put myself first and decide to share my experience with people. So I was just very thankful for all of it, for if I received any no's, if I received any hesitation, if I had moments of doubt, because that it's okay to be nervous and scared. My coaches were always like, it shows you care. Like,
yeah, for sure.
But yes, I was just so thankful for all of it, for any lows, for any highs, for any moments that I was unsure, because I proved to myself there crossing that finish line that I'm able to do this. And that I was just so thankful that I had the support of a lot of different people and organizations.
That's amazing. I love it. Well, cool. And then I always love to ask for a piece of advice as well for somebody who was towing the line of their training for their first marathon, like just like you were a few months back. So if you could give a piece of advice to somebody who's thinking about running their first marathon, what do you think that advice would be?
I would say if you want to do it, you definitely can. What makes it most impactful, I think, and to keep you grounded is to have your why identified very clearly. It cannot change. Of course, like during the course of our life, we change as humans. That's natural. But I think during the 16, 20 week, 12 week cycle, whatever it might be of the training block, to identify your why, like what is your goal? For me, my goal was to finish the marathon injury free, happy and healthy. And that was what I accomplished. That's why I worked with an RDN. That's why I had a training program. That's why I shared with my family and friends. So my advice would be to have your why clearly defined for yourself. You don't have to share it with people, but when things get tough, it's like, okay, this is why I'm doing it. And it keeps you grounded.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. That's great. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for walking us through your first marathon story. Like I said, it seemed like it was really impactful for you. I think a lot of people are going to find a lot of advice throughout your story and just like how you were able to really lean into your community and lean into the process and just, you know, come out the other side feeling grateful for the experience. So thank you so much for telling it. We'll transition into some fun questions now. You kind of already answered one of the fun questions, but we'll talk about fuel and shoes. I always give the disclaimer that fuel and shoes are your own journey. Fuel, try everything and anything. Trial and error is going to be your best friend with finding what works best for you. And then same thing with shoes. Go to your local Fleet Feet, go to your local running store, get your feet measured and find what's best for you. But for you, what have you liked for fuel? You said Huma, but anything else that you've liked for fuel outside of Huma?
I'm a big Huma fan. I put electrolytes in my water. They're acai flavored, so I feel like I'm in Brazil. It helps me out mentally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I take a lot of supplements, so like I always take my calcium, my magnesium. I have something called Nightworks. It's my nitric oxide. I take that the night before to make sure I'm fueling, my blood is flowing properly. That's pretty much it.
Cool. And then what about shoes? What have you liked for shoes over time?
Oh, I love the ASICS Gel Kayano. I got them halfway through my training block because my other shoes ended up racking up 300 and they were kind of small on my feet. And I'm so glad that I changed shoes. Those shoes, I feel like I am like on a cloud, and I have flat feet, so they're also very supportive. I love them. They're beautiful.
Awesome. Very cool. All right, sweet. Well, to wrap us up here, I know we've got a couple, we were talking before, and you've got a couple bigger marathons on the calendar for next year. So you want to talk about some things that you have planned for the coming year?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I have a half marathon and two marathons. So my first race will be the United Half in March. That is my favorite race of all time. It starts in Brooklyn, goes through the Brooklyn Bridge, then up the FDR through Grand Central, Times Square. It's so iconic. It'll be my third time doing that race. I plan on PRing that race, hopefully going sub two. I did 209 in my training, so I'm confident that I can go sub two. And then Sydney, I'm doing the Sydney Marathon in August. I'm super pumped. I've never been to Australia, and it's going to be an amazing experience. I know, yeah. I think that one is the highest elevation out of all the world majors. So definitely be putting in some hills and bridges in my training leading up to it. And then I'll be doing New York in November as well. So we're going to run it back. I'm really excited for next year.
Amazing. Yeah, that's really exciting. And you got in Sydney through lottery, which is even more incredible. That one, it's a newer one, but I've heard it's been a little tricky to get into. So I'm excited to see what you have coming up and how you tackle some of these big goals. I'll put all of your information in the show notes, but if anybody wants to follow along with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram. It's Karina, KarinaAchiqui.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Karina. It was amazing getting to know you a little bit and hearing your first marathon story. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Taylor. I appreciate you having this space for us.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the My First Marathon Podcast. For more stories, tips, and resources, head to myfirstmarathonpodcast.com. And if you want access to bonus episodes, exclusive resources, and extra support for your training, make sure you check out the community at myfirstmarathonpodcast.com/exclusives. You can also follow along with us on socials, Instagram and TikTok. That's at My First Marathon Pod. If you want to follow along with my personal journey, that's at tay.says. Whether you're training, recovering, or just thinking about signing up, you belong here. I'm so excited that you're here, and we'll see you on the next one.